Is it starting? Okay. Okay, we have a little more, a little bit more to do in the Mishnah and Tosefta, and then we will start the Yerushalmi. Okay, I hope it's not too distracting. Already having it there. And once we complete that, which will probably take us through the, might take us through the end of the day. Tomorrow we will start doing. Some of you I know started already. The Bavli and Bava Basra. The first thing we're going to do actually is the Mishnah and the Tosos on it. There's one very long Tosos there and a couple of shorter shorter Tosos that we're going to look at. And I will send you some questions which you can use, which I'd like you to think about as you read Tosos. Just that by Derech HaTamas, I don't forget at the end. This Tosos, the big Tosos on Chav Ches Amud Aleph is a really good example, pedagogically speaking, of how you have to learn to read a Tosfos. At first it's very confusing, but even after it stops being totally confusing, you're trying to figure out why is Tosfos follow the sequence that he does? What is the train of thought? So anyway, I will have a couple of questions for you to think about as you prepare that Tosfos. And there are a few other Makoros, so I will probably send them out later today. Okay, so let's continue now in the Mishnah where we left off. I think we were up to Vamed Varam Amurim, okay? Who would like to read? How about someone? Ari, you can read. Guys, unless you need the power, can I encourage everybody to migrate forward? There's like the big black hole in the middle here. I'm supposed to have everybody crowded around the desk. Okay. That's the way to do it. Okay, come on, keep going. Okay. Crowd the, I know that there may be one or two, you know, outliers who need the power in the back, but other than that, okay. What are the Macs outnumbering the PCs? Wow. This looks like it's going to be a real duel. Okay, fine. All right. Ari, go ahead.
The
Gadar? Okay. So the Mishnah does something, takes a very unusual turn here. And this goes back to something I think I mentioned the first day in Shir, which is that the word chazaka, or the term chazaka, has two completely different meanings. One meaning of chazaka, the cheska shaloshanim, is not the typical usage that we use it. There it just means the person who held on to it for 3 years, but that chazaka, as we've assumed until now, is not a kinyan, it's simply some type of a raya. Whereas, the chazaka, that it's a very strange, b'med devar mamurim, b'machzik. It means when one is talking about, you know, it's all these things, all these people who don't have chazaka, umanim, shutafin, arisin, apotropin, ish, b'nechse isho, isho, b'nechse baila, av, b'nechse bein, b'nechse av, they can't be machzik. In other words, I can't achieve through cheska shaloshanim, or through whatever chazakos of usage, I can never appeal to that as a raya that I am the owner of the land. But if let's say my father wants to sell me something, my wife wants to sell me something, and Uman wants to purchase something, my shutaf wants to purchase something from me. So if they make a chazaka, a kinyan of chazaka, whether in the case of karka, as the Mishnah says, no al godar uparat, so then that works. That's okay. In other words, just because you're an Uman doesn't mean that you can't acquire something. If someone gives you something to fix, and you admire how beautiful it is, he said, you know, I'm not interested in it anymore. So you don't, of course, you're not going to buy that losach mode. But he says, would you like to buy it from me? You think it's nice? And the Uman says, sure. He can make a kinyan chazaka if it's a karka gnal gadol paratz, if it's metaltalim, mishicha hagba mesira, and that's fine, and that works. So that's what the Mishnah says, that if you're talking about chazaka of raya, these people don't have a chazak of raya. If you're talking about chazak of kinyan, of course they have a chazak of kinyan. So these kinyanim work. Now, the kinyan chazaka works. Now, the Mishnah here, intentionally or unintentionally, has opened up a Pandora's box for two reasons. Number one, it sounds as if all the people in the previous part of the Mishnah can have kinyan. Now, Can a husband buy property from a wife? So the immediate issue is the Masha Kansa Isha Kansa Baila. Now that is and the Gemara will talk about this. That is a very important sugya, primarily in Kiddushin, as to what extent a woman can have property where her husband doesn't have any type of shlit in it. The answer is it does exist. So it does exist. What? Maybe, yes. I mean, there is a sugya nedarim about it. What? Simcha, I can't hear, I'm sorry. Well, he's still... but Nichsei Melug, of course, what's that? So Nichsei Melug, he has rights over. In other words, what's that? But she can't... she also takes Nichsei Tzom Barzel, you know, when she leaves the marriage. If they're there, if they're extant, and otherwise he's got to replace them. So notice, when they... but the point is, while they're married, the notion of wouldn't be able to sell the property to anybody... Are you saying that seriously? Well, the answer is that's not matana tmirta, but the Gemara says exactly that. The way we paskin is that if the husband sells property to his wife so that he should no longer have reshus in it, the sale is valid unless we suspect he's doing it legalos mos, is the expression. I think that's the expression. To see if she's hiding any assets, she'll pull the cash. I say, thank you. I'll take my cash now. There you go. Okay. So the Gemara actually does entertain that very seriously, but there are issues, and we don't have to deal with the issues, the pratim now, but the notion of a husband selling to a wife, wife selling to a husband, are complicated by this issue. There's in the reverse, it's also complicated. Assuming a woman has assets, the ability of the husband to buy it raises questions of whether or not she could say, I wasn't really serious in the sale, because she can say, Nachas Ruach Hasisa Levali. She didn't want to engage in Kitata. She didn't want to create marital strife, but it really wasn't a truly consensual sale. So that's one set of issues that the Mishnah opens. The other set, which the Gemara is going to talk about in some detail, and the Yerushalmi as well, is Amasik Benichse Hager. Now, Gerim own property, and they have full property rights of Jews, but there's one little catch with a Ger. And what's that? If a ger has no children, if he dies without children, he has no yorshim by halachic definition. Because according to halacha, when a ger converts, a ger shenis gayer, kikatan shenola dami, he's a new person, it means that for halachic purposes, he's no longer related to his prior family, his biological family. If he marries as a Jew and has children, so those children are his biological and halachic children, but if he never has children, then he will die by definition without any heirs. The origin of this din, where is this din found in the Torah? It's not explicit, but it's Chazal's reading. What? No.
When it says that a Kohen gets the
Yerushalayim. So Chazal asked, somebody has no Yerush. The answer is it's a ger. It's a ger. So what happens when a ger dies? So his property, what happens to his property?
Yehuda?
It's Hefker. And therefore, whoever seizes it, whoever grabs it first, becomes the rightful owner. Irrelevant bisman hazeh because of Dina l'malchus adina, but in the time of the Gemara, it was certainly very relevant. Now, from a conceptual perspective, what's the difference between being zocha benichse hager versus being zocha benichse acherim? Yeah. In other words, if I'm nal gadar parts benichse hager, shemeis v'en l'yoshim, versus nal gadar parts, and in the chasim, you know, that I'm making a regular kinyan on, I'm making the same kinyan on both. What's conceptually the difference between the two of them? There's terminology we would use in halacha.
Das makne.
Correct. There's no das acheres makne by a ger, because the ger is not makne, the ger is dead, it's hefker. It's hefker. It would be true whenever you zochem in a hefker. Now, that apparently does have ramifications. Not in the case of ger, but one of the classic places where there may be a difference midoraisa between having a das acheres makna and not having a das acheres makna is whether a katan has the power to make a kinyan min haTorah. And some rishonim, I think the Balei Tosfos may hold that when a katan makes a kinyan, if there's no das acheres makna, it may only be, maybe even not even derabbanan. Whereas when you have a das acheres makna, the kinyan is more valid. Some maybe even valid midoraisa. So.
No, because
if Hatan makes a kinyan on something that no one else has done, so then why wouldn't it just be there?
It's not a question. It's not a question whether they are allowed to use it. The question is whether or not they are the rightful owners. Since a katan is generally, you might look at it this way: a katan. Why doesn't a katan have kinyan as a matter of principle? Because a katan has no das. So when you have a das acheres makne, and that's where the term probably why it's used that way. Why do you call it a das acheres? So someone else may be able to provide the das in the same way that sometimes in some areas in halacha, gadol omer al gabav can provide das for a katan. So in this case, das acheres makne may work. So when it comes to nichse hager, you're lacking a das acheres makne. It's being zochem in a hefker, and there are in fact dinim that are slightly different, more restrictive dinim, where kinyan works when I'm acquiring from somebody else, but it may not work b'nichse hager. And we're going to see it in the Tosefta. We're going to see it in the Tosefta almost immediately. But the Mishnah has sort of thrown at it as an aside that b'metavon b'machzik avol b'nosein matana, and the truth is it could have been any kinyan. V'ha'achem shechoku, one from one another, and masik b'nisei ager, the kinyan works, even when you're dealing with shutfim, even when you're dealing with arisim, in all these cases, that kinyan works. Okay, the language of the Mishnah, what's so odd about, I mean, I sort of said it, but there's something odd about, what's odd about the Mishnah? Let me repeat a question from the first day. Is cheska shalashanim a kinyan or a raya? It's a raya. Yet the formulation of the Mishnah makes it sound, in some ways, like it's a quasi-Kinyan, right? When you contrast it and say, again, unless it's just a linguistic thing, oh, we told you chazaka doesn't work, that chazaka doesn't work, but this chazaka does work. Unless you explain the mission that way, it's a very strange juxtaposition. It's a very strange juxtaposition of two things that are apples and oranges, that should have been apples and oranges. Okay?
Why do we reject the idea that, you know, originally that the chazaka was acquiring?
It's because of Kol Chazaka Sheini Matayna, which is part of this Mishnah. Now, again, you could say the Mishnah, it's just because it's one Mishnah here, doesn't mean it was originally one Mishnah. What you said is correct. If one wanted to argue that historically it was so that Chazaka were once viewed as a means of acquisition, then this Mishnah, you might say, contains Hedim, contains echoes of Mishnah Keduma. I tend to doubt it because Roman law, if I understand correctly, did not, already by the 5th century doesn't allow such a thing. Not that Jewish law couldn't have once in a time been different, and then Choshen Mishpat again is the area that's most subject to change. I suspect it didn't change. I can't prove that. There's no way to prove it, but my guess is that it's a strange formulation. The Mishnah may be based upon the linguistic part, but what you say, your horror is not, it may not be off the mark.
But it could be both.
No, but that's not, you can't have it as both. In other words, again, you know, like it's like you have two star, you can have a star that's both a star kinyan and a star raya. It's because the star, if it's a star kinyan and it contains the information, and memelet serves as a raya. But here, how is the, I don't think you can get the two together.
Well, okay. Unless you want to read it that you don't have, unless you read it as 3 years being necessary to make the kinyan, and you don't have a kinyan unless you have 3 years.
But you really don't need 3 years if you have a raya. If you have a shtar.
No, I'm saying, b'met from memorim that all you need is a raya is when it's, the question is, what does machzik mean then?
Yeah, but machzik means squatting. I mean, without the negative terminology. Engage, acting as the owner. Daniel?
Not to jump the gun too much, but with Kerusha, isn't that sort of the
Havim
doesn't go in
that
direction.
I know. You're jumping the gun, because when we look at the first sugya and the Shakla Vitarya, at least a couple of the questions of the Gemara seem to point in that direction, and that's what sort of tangles the Rishonim up in knots, right? Tosus and the Rashba and other Rishonim all deal with that. Like, what's the Hava Mina? But you're undoubtedly correct. The Gemara's question, Elameata Chazaka Shemetaina Teve Chazaka, certainly sounds like it should be a kinyan, not just a raya, not limited to being a raya. Absolutely, but we'll get to that soon enough. Okay, now what does the Tosefta have to say on this? Continue, Ari. Okay, that would almost be the lemma from the Mishnah. Now.
Now
Okay, so this has been discussed at some length, the way following Lieberman in Tosefta Kipshuta, the way he understands this is that when you make two kinyanim, two different kinyanim, and obviously there's an assumption of what is the chronology here of these two kinyanim? Two different guys make a kinyan. What is the chronology?
Simultaneously,
which of course raises its own question we're not going to discuss at all, which is Efshel Etzamsim. Any familiar with the sugya? It comes up in Bechoros when you have two animals, two firstborn male animals born at the same time. And what's the status of Kedushas Bechora? But the immediate question is it Efshel Etzamsim? How can everything ever happen exactly simultaneously? Now, there are situations where you can create simultaneity, but typically, there's a whole discussion on whether it's Efshel Etzamsim Bidei Shamayim, even if not Bidei Adam. Somehow, we're assuming that these Kinyanim were done in such a way to happen at the exact same time. I don't know really how that's possible to get two people to do the Nal Gadar. I'm not even sure how you would do that. But let's... Well, yeah, I know, but that's only right. That's whoever. So let's assume it's simultaneous. That's first step.
What if it's like joint action,
Then it's not the case of the Tosefta anymore. I thought about that. Unless you could have one button, one Dr. Seuss gadget that does both Noel and Gadar at the same time, but then it's one person doing it, or it's the two of them doing it b'shutfus, which is different. Here it sounds like each guy goes to try to do something, grab something on the land. So one guy is Noah, one guy is Gadar. So if two people make two different kinyanim at the exact same time, neither's koneh, because we don't know how to evaluate the relative weight and strength of each kinyan, and therefore neither kinyan is binding.
How are they different?
Each one demonstrates ownership different way.
What do both?
Noel and Gadar? Gadar, she build a fence. Noel means you put a door in or you put a lock on or something like that.
It
doesn't mean that you close it. You don't closing a door does not indicate ownership of anything. Changing a lock or putting a door on indicate may be taken as a sign of ownership or that you're a locksmith.
But that's why
Umane Lochazaka, yeah.
Putting in a fence and putting in a door, could look very similar, and couldn't you put in a fence door?
They do two very different things. A fence, remember that a fence protects. A door provides access, limited access. I mean, they're related, but the Tosefta assumes that, reading at least the way we're reading it, that those are two different functions, two different kinds of chazaka, and therefore they're not mitzaref, and therefore nobody's kona. Whereas Noal Ushnaim, Gad Ushnaim, Harezo Chazaka. Then, if they each do the same kinyan, it's a chazaka, and then what do you do? Who owns the land? Yachloku. Okay, continue. Now, here I'm going to suggest an emendation. You'll see why. I think Lieberman suggests this, but go ahead. Hayulo. Okay, now, all right, so far, you don't have to amend. You'll see why later you may want to change your mind. But for the moment, if a person is machzik in one karka, he can be kona all the karkos. Now, to whom does this din apply? So I'm going to tell you now, this din does not apply to nechsei hager. It applies only to a das acheres makne. Why is it that if you acquire one, you acquire all of them? Sadna diara chadhu. That's the Gemara in Kiddushin's expression. I'm not exactly sure what it means, but I think it means that basically karka has, it's all attached. This idea of kinyan, it's almost, I don't know if any of the Rishonim actually say this, it's like kinyan agav, right? Even though kinyan agav, we paskin the metaltalin, kinyan agav means you want to be machna to me, metaltalin and karka. So normally to be kona and metaltalin, you have to pick them up, or you have to do something like that. But if you're being machna to me karka as well, you can be marked to me the metalton agav the karka, and we paskin the metalton don't even have to be tzvurim. They don't have to be piled up in the karka. The metalton can be there. The karka that I'm marking you can be there, and I can be marking you the metalton agav the karka with some of the karka and the metalton. So in that sense, if I'm machzik, if I have one field, all karka is attached, right? It all goes down to the same place. So the Tosefta says, you're machzik in one, you're kona all of them. If you're machzik in one evid out of ten abadim, you're not kona all of them. Why not? Because even if Avadim are Hukshul Karkos, for these purposes, they're sort of separate, independent entities, not connected to one another. Continue. Okay, that's a davar pasha. You can't be makne karka agav netalthlin. There's no such thing. There's no reason to do it anyway. The reason why you're makne, why do you want to be makne? Why would someone want to be makne metalthlin agav karka? What's that? Yeah, if you have a lot of metalthlin, or because you're not in the location of the metalthlin, you don't have to be with karka in order to make a kinyan on karka, because kinyan, if you want to make a chazak on karka, you have to be there, but you have two other choices. You can make a kinyan with kesef and a kinyan with shtar. You can't do a kinyan on kesef for metalthlin. Why not? This is mildly off topic, but it's so basic that I need to say it. I'd like to buy your pen.
Oh,
who owns the pen? Who owns the pen now?
And you have no proof.
No, I have proof. I got 20 witnesses here. I want to know. You change your mind. Who does the pen belong to? Why? Who does the Gemara belong to? No, it doesn't. He saw it. If we don't know, it's one thing. I'll take my dollar back. No, okay. So there's a major machlokas Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. The Mishnah in Bava Metzia in the fourth parak makes it very clear that you cannot be kona metaltalim with kesef. If I give you money for metaltalim, you can back out of the kinyan. You might have to accept the curse. It's called a mishapara, but you can back. Either party, in fact, can, the way we paskin, can back out of the transaction. Reish Lakish says, except what? I don't want to get that discussion of that of the sugya and arachin. That's a different question. I don't want to deal with that right now. Bechoros or arachin? Bechoros. But for the moment, so the assumption is that mos are not konos. There is a machlokas Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan whether or not that's deraisa or takana de rabbanon. If it's takana de rabbanon, the reason for the takana de rabbanon is shema yomar chitecha nisrafu baliyah. That I give you $100 for this wheat, and the wheat's sitting in your shack, you know, which not a very expensive shack, and then it's hit by lightning or something, somebody lights a match by accident, then you have no incentive to protect the goods because you're going to say to me, sorry, your metaltalin went up in smoke. So therefore, they made a takana that until I'm moshech the metaltalin, I am not kona. That's Rabbi Yochanan's position, and it would appear we paskin that way. There are nafkim, even though midrabbanan, they did away with it, there are nafkiminas. Reish Lakish says, no, that dvar Torah meshichas kona. Okay, so just be aware of that. Just be aware of that piece. But the purpose, with that limitation, the fact that I can't just give you kesef in order to acquire metaltalin, that's why there are all sorts of other clever ways to try to transfer metaltalin in the absence of metaltalin. Chalipin is one way of doing that. When you do kinyan chalipin, which means I exchange one good for another good, once you make a meshicha on one, the other one is automatically nikneh. There's no one, the Chachamim didn't institute an insurance policy there. Kinyan agav is another form of a way of transferring metaltalin. Karka, you don't have to be there in order to transfer. There's no reason for the Chachamim, firstly, kesef, no reason for the Chachamim to want to do away with the kinyan kesef and karka, because generally speaking, karka is permanent. It's hard to damage it. And therefore, they didn't do away. Their kinyanim exist. If kesef, shtar, and chazaka, I don't have to be, for the first two kinyanim, on the karka. And if I can be makne karka that way, I can be makne metaltalin as well. Moe, the question?
Yeah. If you did halipin for an item that's not here, clearly, then don't we run the same risk that the person who's selling...
But the answer is that you know that. I don't know how common it was to do chalipin in that sense, but you're going out of your way that, in the normal way, is you purchased with kesef.
Right.
So you're going out of your way to override. So the chacham provided you with a certain kind of protection. But if you're not interested in the protection, they weren't interested in stopping you. I think that's the way
unless
it's classically explained.
Yeah,
if you want to have a situation, but the normal kind of commerce, I give you the cash, and then you think, you know, you walk away and don't worry about protecting my property. So that's why, most are not, again, it could be the Raisa, but I think we pass against only Drabanan, most are not Konas. So you can be Kone, Metalton Agav Karakat. You can't be Kone, avadim agav kelim, because you can't be kona karka agav metaltalin. There's no such thing. So if you're zocha, even if you make a kinyan on the metaltalin, you're not zocha in the karka. You're not zocha in the avadim. But avadim, zocha b'kelim. Okay, there's no kinyan agav by avadim. It could be because the avadim are moving. This whatever. Not going to go into the pratim now. It's not our issue. You do kiddushin. Kelim.
Kelim b'karkaot. Zocha b'kelim. Lo zocha b'karkaot. B'karkaot lo zocha b'kelim.
Wow, what's going on? B'karkaot lo zocha b'kelim. What happened to kinyan agav? So the answer is, it's Nichsei Hager. Kinyan Agav doesn't work in Nichsei Hager. Why? No Das Acheres Machne, apparently. Okay.
So when we had Ezra Sadot, it was...
That's the question. That's why Lieberman suggests the possibility of amending it to read, Kevin Shechzach is a Lohechzit B'Kulan. You have to make two emendations here, because the AFLP in the next clause makes that a very difficult reading. So you might have to say Hayu Lesser Sados Afal Pi Shehechzik Biachas Lo Hechzik Bechulan, or something like that. The Afal Pi is strange in the next sentence, but if you take it out, you take it out of the next sentence. Either way, okay. Or you say that the first part was talking about everybody, the general kinyan, and now all of a sudden we're talking about Nichsei Hager. One of the things that's very frustrating, by the way, about Tosefta and Yerushalmi is that things tend to be Tosefta even more so tend to be disjoint. In other words, you get abrupt endings and on to new topic, and there are no periods or commas, and you can't really tell. And you got all of a sudden, like, what's going on? And then all of a sudden you realize, oh, it's on to a new topic. It's not like the Bavli, amongst other things, tends to have a lot of key words that mark the end. All of you, I assume almost all of you, saw the Yerushalmi this morning, that the transition, there was no transition from the Kasha against Hochei Usha to Hamocher Bayis Lechaveiro Kevan She'ex, right? In the Bavli, The simple reading of the Yerushalmi is that there was no answer to the question. They asked the question and they left it as such, which is common in the Yerushalmi. What would happen if this were the Bavli? Tufta, Kasha, and Amora would respond. There would be something else that would make it obvious that mark the end of the sentence. It's just not there. And so you have to get used to the fact that you have to put the stop signs in yourself. So you could say that the first part of this Tosefta, where Masik Ba'acha, one carcass, kona all of them, is, you could say that it's that it's talking about everybody else, not Ger, because I think it's going to be explicit that it's not coned by a Ger. Okay. Apparently, Kinyan Agav works partially based upon Das Acheres Machne. And in the absence of Das Acheres Machne, that which you make the Chazaka on is that which you get it on. The fact that you are interested in getting the other things, that's very nice. But that doesn't mean that you acquire title to them. Okay. Another way of looking at it is that when you have a Das Acheres Machne, fundamentally speaking, and I don't know if what I'm saying now has been said before and is famous, or it's never been said before and is wrong, or it's never been said before and it's right. But when you have a kinyan with a Das Acheres Machne, in effect, what really is responsible for transmitting the property from one person to the other? The das. But without a kinyan, what do we call that? Asmachta. So kinyan is dvarim b'yalma. The fact that I want to give you my property is nice. But just to know that I'm really serious, so you have to make a kinyan. But fundamentally, what's creating the transfer is the das. When you have something that's hefger, what's creating the transfer? It has to be the kinyan, because no one else is giving it to me. It's the physical action. So it makes sense why when you're transferring me 10 pieces of different properties, 10 pieces of real estate, really it's your interest and your verbal declaration, your intent that transfers it. But I have to make a kinyan as a symbolic act. But if I'm acquiring the properties from Hefker, I actually have to go on the property and show that I'm the owner. Just because I show the owner on one doesn't mean that I'm showing that I'm the owner on the other. Okay. Anyway, continue. That's a toe so far. It's come out accepted. It's lo zacha bekarkos. Okay, bekarkos.
Lo zacha b'avarim.
lo zacha lavadim. Fine. Okay. Next. Okay, now they have the same thing with the two people walking through it. Where is the idea? What? Now, why would Hiluch be a Kenyan? Yeah, well, you know, that's a little bit... That's going backwards, sort of. That's the Lundish way, that since there's a Tana who says that Hiluch is a Kenyan, so now you go back and read the Pasuk in Chumash, it's a Kaddish Baruch who was telling Avraham Avinu to make a Kenyan on it. Right? But Hiluch, what about for the Chachamim? How are they going to read the Pasuk in Bereishis? Right? Avraham Avinu held like Rabbi Eliezer, that should have clinched it. So the truth is, what Hiluch, why should Hiluch be a Kenyan, Michael?
When you fully explore the land, you feel you own
it. Well, feelings are nice, but yeah. But more, you know, there's the Gemara, we did this last year, the Gemara in Chulin, in all places, says that a person should be Messiah Nechasav every day. Right? And one person did it twice a day, and he always wondered why, and then he saw the water pipe broke, and he found all the treasures of Mar Shmuel, I think. So the idea that someone who goes and inspects the property is the owner. That's what the notion of Hiluch is. Now, of course, someone could just go across the property because he's cutting across the property. So I don't know. It's hard to explain what I don't know what exactly the Kudus HaMachlokas is. But Rabbi Eliezer feels this is a form of Kenyan. The Chachamim disagree. Obviously, if you hold like Rabbi Eliezer, it's very convenient now to read the pasuk in Parshas Lech Lecha of Kum Hisalech Ba'aretz Le'or Kol Rachba. And I have no doubt, by the way, that the expression that Tosefta of Hohu Abashnayim Bein La'arka Bein La'rachba. I don't want to say I have no doubt. This is what Simcha, what we call this parallelomania, right? In other words, maybe this is the obvious way of describing it, but I suspect that it might be echoing the pasuk in Bereishis. But you don't have to read Avraham Avinu's travels as a Kenyan, but simply as God wanted to show him the wonderful land he was going to ultimately enjoy.
Avraham, he went both to the Arka and the Rachba, and here it's...
Okay. But I don't think the din would be different. Fine.
So how exactly does this Kenyan work? You walk down the length, and then you own the entire width of the area you walk down?
Well, I don't know. In other words, I think that's part of the problem. How do you? This goes back to a question we asked a few days ago. How do you define width? You know, is it one telem? If there are you have to have some delineating marker. It only is going to make sense if there's something that could sort of, you're walking a certain part of the field, there's a clearly defined row, so you acquire that part. I don't know. I'm not going to break my head over this one, but it falls in the same category of that question. How do you define an area?
If you walk in a spiral.
Okay, then you'll get everything. Okay. Was there a question? Okay, fine. Continue. Okay. Fine. Halachid Beis in the Tosefta. And this is obviously not Nechseh Hager, for sure, because it's Lakach Mimenu. So this works for Kenyan. Sachar Mimenu.
Sachar Mimenu Eser Sadot. Kivam Sheyachseh Ba'achat. Mehen Nechseh
Kekulam. Now, just a comment here. What are Kenyanim of Schirus? You don't have to answer the question, but it's one that will have to be explored. If my memory serves me correctly, there's a Tosus in our Perek and an Arvei Psachim. I think it comes up also by Bedikas Chometz. A machlokas about Mesiras HaMafteach, which of course you're thinking, oh, Mesiras HaMafteach, the Yerushalmi here, but the Yerushalmi is a little different, whether or not Mesiras HaMafteach might be Kona by Schiris. It's clearly, according to the Bavli, not Kona by as a regular Kenyan, but for the purposes of Schiris, that if I rent a house from you for 30 days, so when you can no longer back out on the Schiris, you know, is after I make a Kenyan. So what if you hand me the keys? Does that constitute a Kenyan? So we'll talk about that, we'll eventually deal with that. So if you make a chazaka on one of them, then you have whatever you rented, the kinyan is complete. Lokach.
Is that considered like a kinyan? Like, can you call that a kinyan?
Yes. Know? Yes. The notion, there's a notion in halacha, there's a discussion, but a very important discussion, Avodah Zarah, it's nogea to Isser Shabbos, and that's not the end of mezuzah as well, whether Sheila and Schiris are kanya or not. In other words, you take a shoel as an example very quickly. A shoel is responsible for every single thing that happens to an object. The shoel has almost essentially bought an object, but he has to return the object. He doesn't pay for it, and he doesn't receive money back when he gives it back to you. But a shoel basically has bought the object. How do you know that? Because he's chayiv no matter what happens to the object. There's only one exception, and what is that? Mesa machmas malacha. But why is he shoel patar and mesa machmas malacha? Why is that not like every other ones? What's that? No, but an onus, if it's struck by lightning, he's chayiv. In effect, it's like a mekach tos. If I gave you an animal that was going to drop dead in the middle of the work, that's why mesamach mas malacha is pater. But every other onus, struck by lightning, you know, literally 5 seconds after we make the kinyan on Shela, lightning strikes, boom, hits the cow, kills it, the shoel is chayiv. Why? The answer is because it's his. If I buy a car from the dealer and I walk out and I'm about to drive it off the lot and lightning strikes, it's my loss. Why? Am I at fault? No. I lose because it's mine and an accident happened. It's an act of God and that's just the way it is.
Are you supposed to buy a new cow if your cow died in the middle of working
or whatever? But the assumption is that when you show up to me for a certain period, for that period, it was something that could work and survive for that period of time. And the malacha wouldn't kill it. If you gave me something that was unsuitable for malacha...
Let's say you use malacha...
Anyway, so coming back, I'm sorry, I don't want to... So shelen schiris may or may not be kona. That's a question. It's important by Shabbos. The reason why the Mishnah of Avodah Zarah says you're not allowed to sell an animal to a goy, a behemoth that does work, is we're afraid that you're going to either rent or lend it to him, or perhaps you're going to sell it to him, but before you sell it to him, you're going to give it to him for nisione, to test before, and he's going to test it on Shabbos. And a Jew's animal is not allowed to be doing malacha for anybody on Shabbos. That's the Isser Shvisas Behemto. And therefore, they would go there not selling general, you know, behemagasa at least, to non-Jews, because they were used for malacha. Theoretically, the question of whether she'ela would violate Shvisas Behemto depends upon who owns the behema, the shoel or the mashil. So the answer to your question in general is there is certainly a notion of kinyan by she'ela and schirus. The only question is whether or not the socher or the shoel actually gets a kinyan in the karka, or the kinyan simply makes it that he can't back out, and that I'm entitled to use it, for the terms of the shelus and the schirus. There's a very important gemara. I think I'm trying to remember where the gemara is. It's either Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, that talks about what really is the final stage in which nobody can back out. Like if you're metaltalin, some say that you actually have to start chopping. It's an axe. You actually have to start chopping the wood with it, and then the other party can't back out. But in principle, there's a point at which someone makes an effective kinyan on the shelus and the schirus, and once you do that, you're kona everything you were trying to do. Lokach miktas. Fine, so even if you make a kinyan on one, you can be kona everything else, even though it's a dual use. Fine, the last tosefta, and this once again brings us back to the ger problem, the chasim. What are nechasim she'en lahem achrayas? Why are they called nechasim she'en lahem achrayas?
And then you buy it from the person that stole it.
You're going this way. Emmanuel, say louder. You can't have a lien on them. Right? Achrayus here probably refers to achrayus in a milva. Ashtar sheyishbe achrayus means the right to collect from the properties that you have regardless of what happens to them in the future. In other words, if I lend you money and you own land at the time and I put achrayus in the shtar, or it's assumed to be in the shtar, so then the din is that I can collect from that land no matter who buys it subsequently from you. But I can't. That doesn't work on metaltalin. There's no, as a general rule, there's no achrayas on metaltalin. There's probably no way, almost a way to get achrayas on metaltalin. It's very difficult. So nechasim she'en lahem achrayas, and why, I can't tell you why all of a sudden the Tosefta reverts to this usage. Until now we've been talking about karka and kelim, now we're talking nechasim she'en lahem achrayas, nechasim she'en lahem achrayas, but this is the formulation actually of the Mishnah Kiddushin, that's the language that the Mishnah there uses. So what's the din?
So it's the same thing as before, they just changed the formulation.
Well, it's not the same thing as before, because before we had, accepting our emendation, without the emendation, kelim v'karkos zacha b'kelim lo zacha b'karkos, b'karkos lo zacha b'kelim. There was no kinyan agav. Here, it's keitzad amar lo chotzer v'chol mashe b'socha ni mocher loch kevan shekosav shtar v'kibo mos v'hechzik v'achas mehen It doesn't really matter. You can do any of these three. Hechzik bechulan. So how do you resolve the stira between the earlier part and this part? It's the simple answer. The answer that's generally given is that earlier it's talking about nechse hager shemes vein leyoshim. This is talking about a case of a regular kinyan das acheres makne. Okay. Any questions so far?
A question going back to Mishnah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I just don't get what the chazaka for like the other cases, like you know, notam ben matana.
Right.
What does the chazaka do there exactly? Because I mean, let's say that I go to someone's land and I build a na'al, and then he comes and then I say I own this land because I have a chazaka here and he gave it to me as a matana.
So then no. The point is, if you want to give me a gift, I have to make a kinyan on it. Start with another and very basic detail. Okay, I'll pick a favorite here. Moshe, I'm going to give you $100. Everybody heard that? Okay. Now, come tomorrow, you say, Rebbe, can I have my $100? Do I have to give him the $100? Morally, yes. Legally, no. It's not actionable. Why not? It's Dvar B'Alma. Now, if I say I want to give you my Gemara, my Yerushalmi, okay, here, this is a gift to you. I changed my mind. Can I change my mind? Yes, why? What?
It's Dvar B'Alma still.
Because you didn't make a kinyan. I gave you. If I, you know, I say, make, here, pick this up and make a kinyan. It's very nice. But if I change my mind before, it's not yours, and you're not allowed to take it.
What if you said I owe you $100, even if you don't?
Don't be a clever, wise guy, Emmanuel. I know the way you create a chayav is say chayavani lachamana. Thank you. Okay, moving on. So the bottom line is that that no sin matana still requires a kinyan. That's only intent to allow you to become the owner without paying me. So if I give you a matana and you make a chazaka, or Achim Shechoku, which is a kind of Mecher, or Nichse Hager, that's all.
So Chazaka, there's the same thing as Kinyan?
Yes. That's what I'm telling. Bamed Bamamurim, Bimachzik, means squatting or living, using, as opposed to making a Kinyan. But by a formal Kinyan, for all these people it works. For all these people it works. Okay.
So, I mean, let's say that there's a Hefker field, and you go and you just stay there for 3 years.
Right. Well, and you didn't do Na'al Gadar or Paratz?
Right.
What do we call that? Oh, that's great. What do we call that? What's that?
Bullshit.
Well, that might be true, but that's called the Chazaka Sheinima Chazaka. Right? You claim to own the field. On what basis? The truth is, I suspect, I could be wrong, I suspect, I've never seen this question addressed, that if someone plants and plows a field that's hefker, that's a kal v'chomer from Na'al Gadar and Paratz. That is a form of chazaka as well. And because it's hefker, you can be kona that way. Assuming, of course, that's your intent.
So what's your taina?
Your taina here simply has to be that I made a kinyan. But I think.
How come you never listed that as a possible taina? You said that either you sold it to me or that.
Because when there's another owner, I can't go make a chazaka without their permission. The key of a taina, the chazaka she'enima taina, the taina means permission to take this land. Sale, lechazeka k'nei, whatever it is, that's the taina. In this case, I don't need I need a taina that I made a kinyan. But I don't need a taina. So it may be that using a field when it, you know, is a form of kinyan, but it only works if I have reshus to make a kinyan. So when it's hefker, it works. Because it's better than Na'al Gadar Paratz. But when it's not, it's meaningless. It's meaningless.
I don't think Gemara, when a lot of times it talks about the next day, it says, Oder, that's the method of kinyan. And
yeah, that's true. In other words, that's doing even more to the karka than Na'al Gadar Paratz does, yeah. Yeah, the only question is to what chelik of the karak you're going to be kona, because when you're oder in one part. But yeah, so probably it would be yours. You wouldn't even need 3 years. 1 year would be enough. 1 month would be enough. Because that is a form of chazaka, a stronger form of chazaka, and you don't need a taina because it's hefker. Avi?
What's the reason why Nalu Shnayim and Gadar Shnayim has Chazakah?
Because the kinyan, the assumption, the concern by Nal versus Gadar is that we don't, one of the kinyanim might be considered more of a chazakah than the other, because we don't know which one. Neither has acquired outright title. But when both of them do the same kinyan, they both done a kinyan, and effectively what we say is that they both done a kinyan on half the field. In other words, in one case we know, we have no reason to think that one kinyan doesn't work. And since they both made a kinyan that works, we split the field between the two of them. But when they each make a different kind of kinyan, because one might be stronger than the other, we can't award to either of them, because we wouldn't know. In other words, the assumption is that there might be that only one is kona, and we don't know which one.
So no one is kona.
No one is kona.
But in the second case, when two people...
To do the same kinyan, so then they're kona equally.
And so they each split
the land. They split the land, I think. Yeah.
So in the case where one person is noah and one person is gadar, so... Does that mean someone else comes afterwards in order to be corner of the land, or does that mean no one can ever own the land?
I think that someone else could come and be corner after them, but that's there's a funny Gemara about that, about Gazlan Ein Lo Chazaka. It's on an Amud Bey somewhere early in the parak. Take a look at that sugi. It's not exactly the same thing, but it might be related. I suspect in this case we argue that neither kinyan is valid, because since we can't accept either one, neither demonstrates ownership, and it still remains mamashah.
But if someone else is coming to gadar again later, why is that better than the first time that someone was gadar or nal?
Fair question. I don't know. I'm not sure. I can give you an answer, but I'd rather, I'm not going to want to go down that road right now. So it's a fair question. Yeah.
Sorry, quick follow up. The way you read Nalu Shnayim Vigadro Shnayim, the Vav Vigadro is or, not and?
Yes.
Okay.
Vavs in Tanaitic literature and even very commonly mean or. Yeah.
And the same thing is true from the Tosefta we just read, the last one, where it's.
Yeah, Kasav Shtar, I said this Bahavla, or Kibamos, or Hechzik, Biachas Mehen. All those work. Right, but those are all ors. Okay, Mishnah Dalad. Last Mishnah. Are you Shnayim? Okay, so if you have two Edim testify for 3 years and they turn out to be Zelmimim, so they have to pay everything. Why? What is a Sakol, by the way?
The whole value
And what else? The produce of the land as well. Mishamalo es hakol. Now, you could argue es hakol is not meant to talk about the produce al pipshat, but just simply all 3/3 of the value of the karka, because as you're going to see in the next case...
Wait, the produce meaning the produce it will produce for the rest of its existence?
No. We look at the now. We look at now what the intent of the witnesses was in terms of their testimony. Presumably, what's the answer to that question? It's a klutz kasha, but it's a good question on the surface. So why don't we make them pay for all future produce?
Because that's what the land is worth.
Excellent, Daniel. Excellent. That's the value of the karka, right? If you were to subtract that out, that future's value, the karka would be worth nothing. Okay, fine. Sorry, you threw me off balance for a moment there, and he got it. Okay. Now the next case is. They divide up. It's a little bit like Malchus. Well, it's the opposite of Malchus. Now, the Mishnah gives you a permutation or a slight variant of that case. Shlosha Achim. So you have three brothers, and then one on each year, because obviously the brothers can't combine together to testify. Krovim are psulim. Edim krovim zelizar psulim. Or I should say, are not ksherim. But if you have three brothers, each one testify about a separate year, and for each of those 3 years, one person, the same person joins with each of the three brothers separately. Hare Elu. Okay. Now, what does that mean? Hein Edus Achas Lahazama? Well, in order to be mazim them, you have to be mazim all of them, in order to make them pay. And you can disqualify the testimony, but you have to make, in order to have them be mishal shem enem, they all have to, you have to be ma'asim all of them. Rafi?
Are these edim testifying that they gathered them here for an entire year, or that they happen to know, like, I know, like, during year one, I saw them one day on the field, and year two,
so
one day.
You're asking a question I'm not going to answer right now, because it's going to be one of the earlier sugyas we're going to deal with, which is the question of ritzufim, of what the edim have to testify. It's in Chavtes Amad Aleph, and we'll deal with that then. So that's a general question. What do we expect the edim to have to testify about? Unless you have a very nosy old lady as a neighbor, right, how are you ever going to have a chazakah of every day of the, and night of the Shalosh Shanim?
But I think when you say that you both not feel for 3 days, like, you know, people go away for a weekend.
The issues are addressed in the Sugya and the Rishonim. That's a good question. We'll deal with it. Okay, I just don't want to. I know we don't need to answer that now, because we're going to have to spend a couple of days working this out. Moi?
The hen, are you a Haila Zama true about the first case also, where you have 3 kitot, no brothers? What if only one of them becomes a Zanamin?
I don't know. I don't want to get into that issue now. I almost was not going to do this Mishnah. I don't know the answer to that question. Because I'm still not 100% sure what Eidus Achas Lazama means. It could mean more than one thing. So there's only one note that I want to make on this, and I'm going to leave it with this. I'll take your question in a second, Ari. Some of this is just highlighting what will eventually come in the Gemara. There is obviously a serious problem that's raised by the idea of Mishalshin Beinehem. And it's true in the last case also, Mishalshin Beinehem. What's the problem that's raised It's raised in the last case. It's not in the first case. It may not be in the case of 3 different witnesses. It's not a problem. What's the problem with being mazim the 3 brothers along with this one guy? There's a problem. It's one of the most complicated sugyas in Bava Kama. It's one of the Yalkagam cases, or I think everybody uses Yalkagam case. If an Eid Zomim turns out to be Huzam, from when is he Pasal? From the time that they mazim him, or from the time that he testified? What would you say? The main sugya is in Meruba. I want to know what you think. I didn't ask you what Abai and Rava think. Jesse? Why?
Because at least from Gemara Makos, in the first parak, if they successfully kill someone and then they're found out to be the Muslim, they don't receive any punishment.
That's a technical aspect to the punishment. But the question is, what happens? Let me frame it to you this way.
Oh, wait. Could it be because it's that because... I don't know.
Yehuda?
Testify.
What?
I would say when
why?
Testify because if you're mazing him and it's come to light that he was false, then it throws any testimony he's ever done into question.
Correct. But once you've established that he lied at that particular point, you've established that he's willing to give either sheker. You know, and therefore, you would think that Mikan al-Habai should be Nifsal. Now, Rava, who says that it's Lamafreu Nifsal, retroactively. Rava, who says that you're only Nifsal Mikan al-Habai, there are 2 reasons given in the Gemara. Either because it's a Chid, Eid Zomer is a Chiddush. It's a Chiddush that the Torah was Mam in the second set of Eidim, so it's Ein Lecha Lemichudush of Eilach. But the other Shita says it's only Takana Mid Rabbanon, that because it would create such a mess with all the Dine Torah. Now, what's interesting is the pashtus in this Mishnah is that in Mikan Labon is so why? Because how could you ever make the Edim pay for the full value of the field? If Ruvain testifies with Shimon Levi, Aaron testifies with Ruvain, Shimon, and Levi, 3 brothers. First he comes with Ruvain and says, in 1989, we saw him live on the field, and nobody said a word. We saw him live on the field. And then Aaron comes with Shimon subsequently and says, in 1990 we saw him live on the field. And then he comes with Levi and says, in 1991 we saw him live on the field. He gave testimony at 3 separate occasions, if they're an hour apart or 10 minutes apart. Now, if you say, Melamafreahu Nifsal, it turns out that when Aaron gave his testimony with Reuven, at that point he was Nifsal Eidos. So the testimony he gave with Shimon, it's not Eidos Hashel Hazama, it's not Edom, he's not going to, you can't be Mazim on that, because it's simply not Eidos anymore. He was Apostle Eid. If someone gives testimony, and Beis Din doesn't know they're Apostle, and someone's Mazim them, and it turns out they were already Nifsal for Eidos before, they were Edom that he had been Apostle than Beis Din earlier, there's no more Hazama. You just throw the whole Eidos out. I mean, ironically, it may save him. But the point is that if you say Lamafreya hu nifsal, then this case doesn't work.
What if he's only on the third one first, and the second one, and then the first one?
It doesn't matter. The Gemara, there was a Havamin in the Gemara in Meruba like that, but it doesn't work because at the end of the day, once he's Huzam on the first one, it doesn't matter when you're Huzam. Only if you hold Mikan Laba does it matter. If you hold Lamafreya, once you're Huzam Lamafreya, and first always came before third. Yeah, Jesse, you have a question?
Yeah. Does that mean that the problem is that one of the Edom or all of them aren't able to pay the second and third time, only the first.
Okay, in other words, you're never going to have Mishalshim Beinayim of the three sets, right, where Aaron's going to pay actually a sixth plus a sixth. He will pay a full half because he testified three times, and the others would each pay the three brothers would each pay a sixth because the last he can never pay more than the again. He's never going to be responsible for Shalosh Shanim of Chazakah because he was Nifsal already. If you say Lamafreya hu Nifsal,
so is it like an additional Knas, or is it?
But it should. In other words, we don't know of such a din that it sounds here. It's like a regular din of Eidos Hazama, but it doesn't work if you say Lamafreya hu Nifsal. Simcha. It's nothing to do on the years you're testifying. It has to do
with when I gave the testimony.
Correct. So,
it has to do with the content of my testimony.
But the bottom line is if my content comes about three different years at three separate times, I don't care what.
The question is which one, meaning if I were to give evidence for the first year.
No, but you understand when you testify about a year, it doesn't really matter which year you're testifying about. Testifying about 1 year means nothing. You come into Beis Din, if you're three separate sets of witnesses, you test one pair of testify, it's about 1991. That testimony alone doesn't create a chazakah to be mafsid.
About the second year, meaning if I gave him the first year and the second year, and I was
Nifsal,
the second year, and two other witnesses come in the second year, they can supplement what I now.
I agree, but my point is, in the last case of the Mishnah, where one guy testifies about each of the three different years separately, once you're mazim on one, then the testimony on the rest of the parts get thrown out. Someone help me here. No, he gave one of his testimonies first. I don't care about which year.
The question is which one is who's on
him? It doesn't matter because they can only be mazim on the testimony of 1 year. In order to be chayiv, you alone, to pay the guy for the law of the entire field, you have to testify against him. For you to pay a full half, you have to testify for all 3 years. It doesn't matter in which order you testify, right? Okay. Yes.
So let's say you did say that it works on the prayer, right? Let's say it did in general, right? So the first, you could still make him in his own for the first year, right? Because at that point in time, he would have.
You can only be you basically, this is what you're masim for. I come and testify that Reuven lived on this land for a year.
Right.
Okay, 1989. That's testimony in which you can be masim me. What are the consequences in my testifying that Reuven lived on the field for 1989? If I'm lying? Nothing except for maybe Peros. I mean, we can talk about what happens with Peros. Nothing. I'm a chayiv to pay. Nothing. Because my testimony that was accepted and based in and then Huzam was only on 1 year. And that does no harm to the Marakama.
No, but let's say you accepted all three.
It doesn't matter because when you're posel me for the first one, whenever you're posel me for that, even if you're posel me for that last, retroactively from the time I gave my first testimony on whichever year it was, every other testimony I gave after that is no longer subject to Azama. It's just Eidos Psula.
Well, maybe that's only true if it's more than one court case.
If what?
If it's more than one court case. If you have several, one.
Maybe. Okay. Anyway, we don't have to solve the problem. I'm just pointing out to you where the... I don't think that's the answer, but that the Pesach that's being opened by this Mishnah raises the question about the status of Eid Zomim, because it's such a famous sugya, I could not avoid
also,
mentioning it.
How does the tzirif work for the Eidus? Do you have to be separate cards, each get up and say they're testified about a year? Can one guy come and say, I saw 3 years, and the other three people come up one at a time?
The answer is probably you can. It's a machlokas whether Edom have to testify at the same time.
For Mamanos,
yeah. There's two machlokas that the Gemara always brings together. It's going to be brought in Cheskas Sabatim. One is whether you have to see the testimony at the same time. The other is whether you have to testify at the same time. One's Rabbi Shua ben Karcha, but I think that's the other one. Daniel, you had a question or comment? Okay, fine. I want to skip tests in the Tosefta. We'll stop here in terms of the Tosefta. I want to at least get started a little bit on the Yerushalmi, because I know a lot of you have gotten through the Yerushalmi already. And just one other comment also. Those of you who finished preparing the Mekoros, I would recommend, I mean, you can choose what else you want to learn. I would recommend doing Bekias in the latter part. You know, I'd like everybody, if possible, as many people as possible, to do the Perek, or we don't complete an Iyun in Bekias. So I would recommend starting in the Mishnah. I know a couple of you asked me, I think Nun Vav and Nun Zayin, the Cheskas Metal, the Chazaka and Achatzah there. I think I would start with that Mishnah and go to the end of the Perek, and then eventually you sort of work backwards in chunks if you happen to be finished the Mekoros. Anyway, Yerushalmi. Learning Yerushalmi is difficult for a few reasons. Number one, it's in Galilean Aramaic, and it's almost all Aramaic. Sandy, I'm sorry if you're hearing this again. The Bavli is written in what language primarily? Hebrew. Okay, I know that initially might not seem to be the case, but I'm told that the estimates of Hebrew in the Bavli, which I don't really believe because it somehow doesn't fully, you know, work with my experience, is that somewhere, depending on how you count certain words, somewhere between 50 and 70% of the Bavli, or maybe the numbers are even higher, I'm not sure, is in Hebrew. Okay, so Yerushalmi is much harder because it's almost all Aramaic, not all, but most higher percentage Aramaic. It's in Galilean Aramaic. There are no stop signs, and there's also no anonymous layer of the Gemara to explain and to glue everything together, as you find throughout most of the Bavli. There's very little of that in the Yerushalmi. What makes matters worse for the Yerushalmi is that Yerushalmi was not always studied so much. It was neglected, and therefore the manuscript, the history of the text, is very, very poor. There's really only one manuscript of the Yerushalmi. It's only one manuscript that covers the entire Yerushalmi, but that's a tautology, because there are parts of the Yerushalmi that once existed no longer exist because we don't have any manuscripts of them. How do we know that they existed? Because it's inconceivable that there's Yerushalmi on the first 21 prakim of Shabbos and then on Erevin, but there's no Yerushalmi on the last three prakim of Shabbos. But because we only have one manuscript basically for all of Yerushalmi, there may be a couple of manuscripts that cover parts. Basically, whatever's not in Ksav Yad Leiden, which I think is a 12th or 13th century manuscript, does not exist for all intents and purposes in the Yerushalmi. The first printed edition of the Yerushalmi in the 1520s, I think, the Venice edition, which is printed in four columns. When you see references in the Yerushalmi, there are two systems. This Perek Halacha, which is the one you're probably more familiar with, but the earlier form was Daf and Amud, and there are four Amudim per Daf, because it was actually a page split into two columns, just text, no commentaries, and two sides of the page is Daf Aleph, Beis Gimel, and Dalet. The Yerushalmi not only has a Daf Aleph, but also the numbering does not restart with each Masechta, it starts with each Seder. So Masecha Shabbos starts with Daf Aleph, Amud Aleph, but Masecha Erevin starts with I don't know what. If you're looking at the Bar Ilan and you take a text and you see even some of the texts I will give you, you'll see both kinds of nomenclature, the Perek Halacha and the Amud Daf. The Yerushalmi text in very bad shape. The Venice edition was based solely upon the Leiden manuscript with emendations of the printer. The printer claims to have had other Kisveyad. Lieberman demonstrates that he lied. He didn't. And that all the changes from Ksav Yad Leiden were of his own initiative, and many of them were bad and obscured important, good, but difficult texts. We do have some Geniza fragments of the Yerushalmi. Ginsburg published, I think it's called Sri Dei Yerushalmi Mina Geniza. Is that right? I forget what it's titled. It's easy to find. And there are Kisvaya that cover small parts of Yerushalmi. I think there's one for Nezikin, actually, at the Bavas. Fine. So the text is hard to read. Now, there's a second complicating factor for us this year, is that the Yerushalmi Nezikin is somewhat different than the rest of the Yerushalmi. Those of you who are new to the shir, probably, there might be an exception to have not learned Yerushalmi extensively. Those who have been in the shir a while have learned Yerushalmi somewhat relatively extensively. Last year we didn't do too much because there is no real Yerushalmi on Chulin. There's a forged Yerushalmi on Chulin, one of the great 19th to 20th century forgeries. The history of that is really interesting. Once upon a time, you had Leitzanim who were really smart and clever. Today, Leitzanim are just stam Leitzanim. Right? They're not usually that interesting, but once upon a time, they were really clever. You know, if you're going to be devious, at least do it in a clever fashion. Be entertaining, interesting, intellectually stimulating. So somebody invented Friedlander, I think, claimed to have found a Yerushalmi. He was a character, very interesting, shady character, very interesting. How about we should have all these shady characters today? Okay, so anyway, what's that? There are a number of people who exposed him, yes. The Ragachava was one of them. There's a legend as to how he knew, but it's probably an incorrect legend. Was that every Masechta in the Yerushalmi, the way I heard this, I think in 11th grade, every Masechta in the Yerushalmi has a new Amora who's not mentioned anywhere else, and this wasn't true in these Masechtas. I suspect what it really meant is that pretty much all the material can be seen as being drawn from other sugyas in the Yerushalmi and the Bavli being touched up. I suspect that's how they actually knew. To think about it, to be so clever as, you know, to forge, because he did create new material. You have to know how to, you know, when you read the Purim HaMavaser, if they have one this year, so usually the traditions or the commentator, they make up a Purim Gemara. But I have to tell you, I usually look at it and I want to cry because it's so bad. I don't mean the humor. I'm not a comedian. I would not pass on that test. But the language is so bad. If you're going to write a Purim Gemara, at least let it be a good Gemara. I see. Cinnamon is thinking. Oh, I think we know who we're going to be. Our editor is going to be this year. No thanks. So here's a guy who can not only forge Bavli if he wanted, because that I'm sure there were a lot of Talmidei Chacham who could forge Yerushalmi. That's very impressive. So anyway, what's unique about this Yerushalmi this year is that Yerushalmi Nezikin, it was already noticed, at least by, I forget who Lieberman quotes, that there are some oddities about Nezikin, and it's very clear that Yerushalmi Nezikin is different than the rest of the Yerushalmi. Lieberman thinks it was edited both earlier in a different yeshiva. Most of the Yerushalmi was edited in, there were three yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, three centers, Tveria, Tzipore, which is Tveria in the valley, Tzipore up in the mountains, and Kesaria. They were all Talmidim Rabbi Yochanan, but he had different Talmidim. Rabbi Abahu was sort of the school in Caesarea. And Lieberman believes since we know the main Yerushalmi was in Tveria, and that the differences between Tveria and Tzipore, and based upon other things, are not great enough that this really would likely have been the product of Tzipore. Therefore, his assumption by process elimination is that this is Talmud Shel Kesarin, and that's what he labeled Maseches Nezikin. I gave you the parallel sugya, A, because you always are supposed to look at parallels in Yerushalmi and Bavli. Very, very important. You may be castigated several times throughout the year if you have failed to look up parallels. The Masoras HaShas will do that for you. If there's any, it's not in the Masoras HaShas. Number one, I will not hold you responsible. Number two, I probably won't know about it myself. But you should always look up parallels. I gave you this Yerushalmi in parallel in particular because it struck me immediately when I read it that, whoa, this is what Lieberman's talking about, that you look at parallel sugyas. Normally when you get parallel sugyas in the Yerushalmi, they're virtually identical. They're very useful. You know why? Because often if the text is corrupted in one, you can get the corrections from the other. You know what the original one was, because the odds of both being corrupted are much lower. Here, so I'm used to looking at parallel sugyas where identical, but you see a line fell out, a word was misspelled, you could see how the scribal error happened. Here, you can see it's sort of the same sugya, but it's shown in Legamre. And therefore, that's why I sort of gave it to you. There's no parallel to the first part, but we're going to start with the beginning, and then we will see sort of the differences in parallel. So let's at least try to do the first half, and some of you who learned the Bavli immediately are going to recognize the parallels to the Bavli. Okay, thank you, Ari. May I have a volunteer reader? How about someone who hasn't read before? How about someone new? Chadashim bo v'afisu l'ketores. Daniel, go ahead. Okay, one just quick ha'ara here. The Mishnah text printed in the Yerushalmi Firstly, you have to distinguish both in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi between the Mishnah text printed and the Mishnah that's embedded. When I was a Talmud in Yeshiva, especially when I was much younger, I thought the Piska'ot were just some editor's convenience where he put it in to tell you which part of the Mishnah the Gemara was going on. The Piska'ot that are both in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi are among the earliest preserved texts we have the Mishnah. We have no Mishnah from Bavel. We have most of our manuscripts of the Mishnah from Eretz Yisrael, but the only Babylonian Mishnah preserved, when it wasn't botched by the scribes, is what's printed in the little Piska'ot in the middle of the text. The Mishnah that you see printed in the Bavli and in the Yerushalmi, and even the manuscripts of the Mishnah that of the Gemara that happened to have a Mishnah, that's a Mishnah that was added in externally. The Mishnah eventually, at some point early on, was stripped out of the Gemara. Many Kisvei Yad of the Gemara don't even have a Mishnah text in them. All they have are Piska'ot. Those are the original, those are the earliest text witness we have to the Mishnah. So, Cheskes Abatim Bar Shichonim Aras. Okay, and you can already see very trivial differences between that and our standard printed Mishnah. The Hei Idea, go ahead. Now the Yerushalmi asks. Okay. So minay lechazakos. The plural is a little bit odd, but it probably means chazakos and all the things listed in the Mishnah. It's the same chazaka. Okay. So what's that? So mishar hamuad. What does that mean?
Making a shor muad. How it needs to have it three times.
Three times. Okay. A shor hamuad. So it has to be, or v'imshar nagachu mitmol shushom v'lo yishmerenu ba'alav, one by Misa, one by Nezek. So it has to, the way it seems the Amoraim understand, three times if the ox gores, then it becomes a shar hamuad. Now, what does that have to do with this?
Three.
Oh, that's very nice. Okay. And there were three shepherds in something, I don't know, in the Christian Bible. And three, lots of stories. What's the connection?
They think that something might have changed. That just as his status changed from a town to a muad. So two, you might say that the Baal has changed.
Okay, so the simple, what Daniel's saying is very important. Firstly, remember the Yerushalmi tells us nothing about what the comparison is. It seems it only gives us the superficial, but you have to figure out what is the Yerushalmi thinking. And what he says is very well, but of course, where did you get that idea from? You got it from the Bavli. That doesn't make it wrong. I mean, I think that's the starting instinct, but you can't really tell. In other words, the idea is that if three times changes the status of the animal from tam to muad, so 3 years in the possession, and here, yom lashana, is exactly what's happening, three periods of time, changes it from the possession of one to the possession of the other. Rafi?
Just to offer like an alternative
Sara,
I guess, is that you can also say that at three times it's no longer a coincidence. I mean, twice is a coincidence, three times and on it no longer is. So that's when it's something that's legitimate as opposed to circumstantial.
That's good, actually. Right? That provides you with the... So you're saying that is a raya. In other words, the fact, so you're already focusing on the fact that I work on the land, nobody says anything, right? Nobody's moha, and you know that I did it 1 year and nobody said anything, because the owners didn't care, whatever, 2 years, 3 years, all of a sudden they're not protesting, even though, remember, then all of a sudden that's proof.
No, but I would take it into more of the abstract and just look at the number three, that's what I'm saying, an alternative to what the Bavli says. Is that when you look at the number three, which is what I think the Yerushalmi is doing here, it's just looking at the concept of three and then applying it to other
things. No, but there's no concept. What's the concept?
That's what I'm suggesting, is that when you look at the number three, it's one above coincidence.
I know, but so what is
it? Change
in status. I understand. But that's why I was feeling what you were saying. It's not a coincidence. What? When it comes to Karkos, what's not a coincidence?
When you apply it there, it's no longer a coincidence. It's no longer just situational that I'm living on this land. Now it becomes something of ownership.
No. But then that's. I mean. If you say coincidence, it really is more right. In other words, the fact that a guy, you want to know, does the fact that I'm living on the land mean it's my land? Maybe yes, maybe no. Three times in a row I'm doing it. Obviously it's my land. I think that's, if you could talk about coincidence, that's what I would extrapolate from it, and that's the raya aspect. Simcha?
I think what Rav is saying, I think it's that of a shor muad, another way of looking at it is that three times shows you what the animal always was. You can never actually tell whether an animal is muad or tam until it actually has acted and proven its inner nature. So too, when you're in the field for 3 years, it proves that you've always been the owner.
But that can't be. Why not?
It's a riot.
No, but that can't be, your formulation can't hold true anyway. Why not?
I said it.
Nothing against you, Chas v'shalom. Chas v'shalom.
That's right.
Okay. No, because what happens if we have edus to a marakama? If I have edim that the field was owned 4 years ago by Plony, so a poor... No, but then the whole thing should fall apart. No, not if they owned it 4 years ago. It's not that it always was. So Rafi didn't mean that. I don't think he meant that anyway. Moshe?
I don't think it has anything to do with figures because these are arbitrary. I think it's asking how do you know that you can make assumptions? In other words, any time you have a chazaka, where does chazaka come up in the Torah? What's the precedent for it?
That is excellent, but it's not right. Well, I take that back. It might even be right. It's not how the Yerushalmi understood the statement. But that's excellent.
Should be asking that, but
they're not. How do you know? And that would actually explain why chazakos, because this is not the only area in halacha that has it. In other words, we have a notion elsewhere in halacha, it's a machlokas from Shimon Gamliel and Rebbe, whether two or three times makes chazaka. For example, katlanis, or ro adam machmas tashmish. There's two examples that come to mind immediately. Katlanis is a black widow, we call it. A woman who marries and two or three husbands die. So machlokas, Rebbe and Rishon Leo, at what point do we say that she's a chazaka of causing husbands to die and she shouldn't marry her again? Or Ro Adam Achmas Tashmish says other its own ramifications. So how do you know this concept of chazakos? Then when an action is repeated, that all of a sudden changes our presumption. Now, that is excellent, and it would explain the plural chazakos. It's not how the Yerushalmi, however, understood it, how Rabbi Yosei understood it. In other words, if you stop there, for Holchei Usha, it might be correct. Maybe that's what Holchei Usha meant. But for Rabbi Yosei, certainly didn't understand it that way, because his question tells you that he understood it really was a focus on three discrete and distinct time periods establishing a changeover. Now the question is, and the fact that he knocks it down by saying that it would only work, it won't work for Rabbi Yehuda, but the other Shita, who's not Rabbi Yehuda, holds that Richei Negiosav Chayav, right, that if it's nogeach three times in one day, Rav Meir says kal v'chomer becomes a muad. So that wouldn't work then. That wouldn't explain the chazaka. So, but according to what you're saying, it still would explain the chazaka. Now that's just the detail over how do we separate discrete actions, but it should still work for Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Yosei certainly didn't understand Holchei Usha that way. That doesn't mean that your interpretation is impossible. It's very appealing. It's very appealing, but it won't. But at least Rabbi Yosei didn't understand it that way. So that's why I initially said it's very good, but it's wrong. But it could be that it's just not the way Rabbi Yosei understood it. It's possible. Yehuda.
Maybe in light of the Bava's discussion right after the Mishnah, the Yerushalmi could be concerned with how do I know not just the pattern of 3 years, but also Taina? Meaning by Muad, it's not good enough that he's done it three times, but you also need Hatra. So maybe the Yerushalmi doesn't say it in as many words, but maybe the Yerushalmi is saying, by that very same token, that's how we learn Chazaka plus Taina.
To pull a line from the... it's not the Ramban's line in the Muhammad, so all the Rishonim asked this question. Who's mentioned Macha here? I mean, I guess that could be a Taina against... In other words, I would have said Minayin L'Machos, not Minayin L'Chazakos. So the answer to that question...
Without Taina, it doesn't work. I mean, the Bavli takes it for granted.
Right, but it's nothing to do with Shar Muad. That's the problem.
What I'm saying is that's what the Yerushalmi is asking. Where do I know that Chazaka in its complete package is required? You're filling in a lot of words, but...
Okay, maybe. All right, fine. So now the Yerushalmi... We'll stop here. I'm going to try to end shir a little bit earlier than we've been ending. I mean, I'd like to catch you out here by 2:45. But we'll pick up with working on the Yerushalmi's question tomorrow. And we should hopefully get through the rest of the Yerushalmi and get a chance to start the Bavli, I hope. Shir tomorrow will be... It's Tuesday, so it's early. It's at 11 o'clock. Okay? I hope that they don't think that somebody else is scheduled in here and it will be... The Fina program is, but...